I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match. Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, truth over your favorite personality. I want to shift gears a little bit this morning because there's something going on in the world platform that I have a little bit of knowledge and training on. I want to share with you. You see, I'm not only an attorney who has studied the Constitution and its foundation, but many of you know I also was in the Army. I was a Russian linguist in the Army. And when you're a Russian linguist in the Army, the military sends you to Monterey, California, to the Defense Language Institute to learn the Russian language. Now, the Russian was picked for me by the Army. I did not choose Russian. Actually, I chose Arabic and fought to get transferred to an Arabic class. My best friend in basic training was going into the Arabic class, and we wanted to stay together. And I am very grateful that I was not transferred to the Arabic class. I cannot imagine how different my life would be today if I had gone the Arabic route. Not to mention, in the very least, I would have never met my husband. My husband and I met in the Russian school. So not only are the students required to become fluent reading, writing, speaking Russian in 47 weeks, we have to also become fluent in the Russian culture and the Russian history. And we are taught in total immersion situation by Russian instructors. And so I got to learn not just simply the language, but the history and the culture from native Russians. That is the best way. I think the only accurate way to learn a history is to learn it from the people who actually lived the history. That's why when I study the Constitution, I am an original text historian. I don't read other people's books on history. I read the documents themselves. And so with this situation going on, with the jet, the Russian jet being shot down by Turkey, I want to offer a little bit of my own insight into this. Now, this is going to be Chris Ann Hall opinion section, okay? You know I don't do that very often. But when I do offer up opinions, I want to make sure that you understand that this is Chris Ann Hall opinion section. And this opinion is based on what I have been taught and my training in the Russian education, Russian history, and culture by the Russians who lived it. And I find it very interesting. First, I've always found it very interesting, Obama's hatred of Vladimir Putin and the dynamics that they have with each other. Putin is a very intelligent man. I do not admire him for his moral character, but I do admire the man from an intellectual perspective. He is good at what he does. He knows people. And I believe that he knows how to judge the character of people. And, you know, anybody that can call Obama's number from the get-go has to be some kind of good person, one way or the other. I would like to say that Vladimir Putin and Barack Obama are intellectual opposites from that perspective. And I find it interesting, this poking at Vladimir Putin and the Russian people. I find it interesting the automatic defense of Turkey in this situation, because I think that, in the very least, the facts in this situation are a bit muddled. We are now over a half a day from this situation. And there are already conflicting reports coming out about flight patterns and purposes and proper placement and that sort of thing. And to be honest, I don't think you can trust any of the parties in this situation to tell the truth. So the fact that we would be so immediately choosing the side of Turkey is just a bit strange. I think in a situation like this where you can clearly not trust anybody, I think silence is the better part of valor in this. And I don't know, maybe I'm just a little biased in this, but I have a tendency to sort of automatically question the anybody that Barack Obama wants to support, given we know his immediate support will be of anything Islamic and Muslim, and against anything that is not Islamic and Muslim. And there's no way to dispute that statement. It is obviously an opinion, but I don't think there's any way to dispute that. Look at what happens in America. You have a Muslim boy who builds a clock in a suitcase that looks like a bomb, and the school freaks out, doesn't handle the situation perfect, obviously, and the boy gets an invitation to the White House and an immediate tweet on Twitter from the President of the United States. And yet, we have a young man in primary school who makes bites a Pop-Tart into the shape of a gun and goes bang bang, and he is suspended, and we get nothing from the president. We have students who are suspended for wearing Christian T-shirts or shirts supporting our military. And nothing but silence from our president. So I think his position is very clear. He is Islamic is sympathetic, in the very least, and a Muslim supporter above and beyond everything else. And we need to look at some things about poking Putin. I believe the poking of Putin is intentional. I believe that it's something that NATO intended. You see, on the 2nd of March in 2015, the Deputy Secretary General of NATO gave a speech before the annual conference on weapons of mass destruction, arms control, disarmament, and non-proliferation in Qatar. And in this, they make this amazing statement in March. He says, as a result, we have no choice but to rethink our approach to Russia and its trustworthiness as an international partner. We do not want to see our past achievements in arms control, confidence building, and transparency evaporate. Russia should realize that. By violating its commitments, by avoiding transparency, and by making its neighbors feel insecure, it also diminishes its own security. But for the time being, there is no sign Russia yet realizes that. You see, back in March, those are veiled threats to Russia. You had better get on board with NATO, or your security will be at risk. Now, Putin is not someone who's going to be threatened. I mean, let's look at the history of Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin joined the KGB in 1975 at the age of 23, after he had earned his law degree. In 1999, he was appointed one of three first deputy prime ministers and was appointed acting prime minister of the government of Russia, of the Russian Federation, by Boris Yeltsin. On December 31st, 1999, Yeltsin unexpectedly resigned, and Putin became acting president of the Russian Federation. Okay? 1999. And since 1999, Boris Yeltsin has been the leader of Russia. This is 2015. I just want to make a very bold statement. Vladimir Putin, by all practical definitions, is the czar of Russia. I realize they don't have czars anymore. But this man has managed to stay in a leadership position in Russia since 1999. He was elected president for two terms. And then the president who was elected after his second term became appointed Putin as prime minister by executive order. Now, there's been a constitutional amendment that allows the presidents to serve three terms. And Putin is president again. This man, former KGB agent, and I don't know what you know about KGB, but they are no joke, has stayed in power over the Russian people for 15 years. And that's not going to change. And poking the Tsar of Russia is not going to work out well for anyone. No, Mr. Rubio. You poking the Tsar of Russia is not going to work out well for anyone. Especially when we don't have all the facts. Especially when NATO itself should be held suspect.
Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
I want to take a moment to look at NATO, because this is a bit of history that we would do well to relearn and understand. This history of NATO. You see, NATO was formed after the Second World War in 1949. The North Atlantic Treaty. And it is a direct result of the formation of the United Nations in 1942. And the whole purpose of the United Nations in 1942 was to stop anything from, like, World War II from ever happening again. We have to realize World War II scared the mess out of us. I mean, it made us talk about things that we would never, ever talk about. And it caused us to have this global perspective that the leaders of the world had hoped we would have since about 1903. If you want to know about the history of the globalization of America, there's an article on my website called Stolen Education, Stolen Children, Stolen Future. And the globalization of America was started with the Department of Education, which was formed by Congress in the early 1900s through the help of the Rockefellers and the Carnegies. And it was called the General Education Board back then, not the Department of Education, but it is the Department of Education just by different name. And the whole purpose of the General Education Board was to get American students to begin to think globally and to view themselves as global citizens. Now, this is the early 1900s. And so now, I mean, this is prior to World War I. And so now World War II comes about, and we are terrified. We don't ever want to see something like this again. So then we form the United Nations, who creates a Bill of Rights that says that people have a right to a freedom from fear, and our entire dynamics change. We focus not on liberty anymore, but are ruled by fear. And that's what's been driving America ever since. This fear of world war. And that's why we have NATO. Now, the interesting thing is, while we're still in a little bit left in the Chris Ann Hall opinion zone, war fixes economies. War resets economies. Everybody knows that. That is a historical and economic fact. Why would NATO be poking the Tsar of Russia? Why would NATO choose Turkey, a member of NATO who is supporting ISIS, a member of NATO who in the very least has done nothing, knowing that they have active ISIS forces in their country? I'm sure they're supporting them financially. Why would NATO support Turkey with all the opposition that Turkey has had to nations who want peace and who want to stay free from Islamic intrusion? Why would NATO choose Turkey and poke Russia? Because war resets economies. NATO wants war. NATO wants a global war. They have so much to gain from a global war. They can reset the economies of the world. Greece gave us an insight on where we are. And in the inevitable economic global crash, even after China's crash, is just simply avoided by illusion. And we can avoid that economic crash through war. But what else does NATO have to gain from a war? I will submit to you much more than a reset of the economy, but a reset of the mentality of the people. World War III would push the people of America into a greater global perspective, increasing the power of the United Nations, increasing the power of NATO, and creating a societal change that may never turn back around.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Just a few things to think about as you watch this international debacle unfold. Poking Putin is going to get exactly what NATO wants. And we ought not take sides in a situation that is simply going to thrust us into a new global situation. At least not until we have all the information that we need. Because I'm going to tell you what, you cannot trust Turkey. You cannot trust NATO, and I would not trust Russia either. There's too much going on here that we don't know about. So before you take sides, keep in mind that there are forces in effect that have nothing to do with Crimea, have nothing to do with Syrian borders or Russian borders, and everything to do with the further globalization of America. And as that is first and foremost on the people who would have American perspectives changed, you know, maybe we need to look at that real quick. Let's look at this history real quick. In 1902, the General Education Board was incorporated by Congress, endowed by John D. Rockefeller, and Frederick Gates, the director of the General Education Board in 1902, said, "In our dream, we have limitless resources, and the people yield themselves with perfect docility to our molding hands. The present educational conventions fade from our minds, and unhampered by tradition, we work our own goodwill upon a grateful, responsive folk." What is their own goodwill? Well, Congress, in 1970, the Senate published this statement in the official congressional record. "The General Education Board was authorized to do almost everything conceivable which in any ways related to education." And in 1918, William Boyce Thompson, Federal Reserve Bank director and founding member of the Council on Foreign Relations, said, quote, "Russia is pointing out the way to great and sweeping world changes. When I sat and watched those democratic conclaves in Russia, I felt I would welcome a similar scene in the United States." The Commissioner of Education for the state of Maine stated to a conference of world educators in 1927, "If there are those who think we are to jump immediately into a new world order, actuated by complete understanding and brotherly love, they are doomed to disappointment. If we are to ever approach that time, it will be after patient and persistent effort of long duration." John Eugene Hardley, law professor at Harvard, published a book called International Understanding in 1931. He said, quote, "And the builder of this new world order must be education. Education can alone lay the foundation on which the building is to rest. Plainly, the first step in the case of each country is to train an elite to think, feel, and act internationally." And then, the NEA being chartered in 1906. In 1942, the American Federation of Teachers published a book titled America, Russia, and the Communist Party in the Post-World War. If this war is to be followed by a just and lasting peace, America and Russia must find a way to get along together. The United Nations, including America and Russia, is the only agency that can establish such peace. The American Federation of Teachers was pushing the UN. The UN Charter becomes effective on October 24, 1945. With the U.S. Chamber of Commerce as a prime mover in establishing in the United Nations. The United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, and its mandate for international intellectual cooperation had already begun working under the League of Nations resolution in 1921. You see, there are bigger movements here and bigger players. World War II scared us into wanting global peace. Global peace. Just and lasting global peace. That is a phantom. That is not something that we can achieve. But it can change the mentality of the people from a liberty perspective to a fear perspective. And as we are watching all of this unfold, and if NATO continues to poke Russia, this will not end well for America. Because there are people in America that want war for economic reasons and for reasons of political power. Watch who is most vocal in this. See, one of the best tools of investigation is just simply listening. Who is the first to jump on board and start screaming things about, oh, I don't know, war with Russia? And you will identify those who are looking for something to gain. I'll remind you that the Russian jet was shot down for simply crossing a border. There were no bombs dropped. No one died. And the flight path, well, that's being disputed by many different places, so we don't even know the actual flight path. And yet we have people calling for war because a flight went off path. How many people have died? How many people died in 9/11? Did we go to war with Saudi Arabia? I mean, isn't it clear that the majority of the suicide bombers were from Saudi Arabia? Look at how many people have died by these Islamic extremists. I mean, actual deaths and catastrophes. Are we talking about going to war? No. We're not. But a Russian plane, at the very most, flies off course, is shot down by Turkey, and all of a sudden Turkey has the right to defend its people. How many times in our history have we flown off path? How many times in our history has a sub gone where it wasn't supposed to go, or a ship where it wasn't supposed to go? How would we have interpreted if those countries, when we flew off path and our subs went off or our ships went off, blew up our stuff? All I'm saying is, we ought not take sides right now in this situation. And anybody who is, I think that we must listen and hold them suspect. A prudent leader would wait until all the information is in and will operate off all information before talking about things like World War III, because that's what we're looking at. Because if you poke the Tsar of Russia, he's not going to simply apologize. He did not get to where he is and has not maintained the power that he has maintained by allowing people to threaten and intimidate him. If you know anything about KGB and the success of Vladimir Putin in his career, you will know who Vladimir Putin is. And I'm not saying we should operate in fear of Vladimir Putin. I'm saying we should give him a respect that he is due for his position. And respect, not fear, would guide in prudence that we would say, let's gather up all the information that we need here before we make any claims of taking sides. I find it interesting in remembering what our framers had said. Both Jefferson and Washington were very adamant about not taking sides. Washington would probably be classified today as an isolationist, although I don't think that's an appropriate way to term that. Washington was a businessman. And Jefferson and Washington and many of our framers had hoped that America would become the economic hub of the world. The business leaders. What they saw in America were resources that were not available anywhere else in the world. And they believed that if we picked sides, it would be a bad business move. Washington would say that when we have allies, we have automatic enemies. And therefore, we should not have allies. We should just be business partners, equally treating all. Problem is, war comes, and fear comes, and fear makes us pick allies, and fear makes us take sides. Fear is an irrational reactionary emotion, and I think that we'd do better to stick with a little bit more truth, logic, and investigation. Then operate on fear. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So I don't know if this was too far off our normal constitutional beaten path. And I usually don't get into the whole mission creep sort of digression, as it were. But I do know a little bit about Russia and about the Russian psyche and the Russian history and Vladimir Putin. And I do know that we are not being told the truth. And so as critical thinkers that I hope that we are in the Liberty First Brigade. As critical thinkers, I hope that we will sit back and gather in the information that we can. Because this situation is highly volatile. And we could see something erupt quickly. And at points like this in our history, we should be even more attached to liberty than before. Because terms like World War III and Russia going to war and NATO fighting against Russia are terms that are only used by people who want to invoke fear. I want you to set aside your critical thinking, your rational thought process, and operate solely on fear. As if the fear of ISIS was not enough, we've got to kick it up a notch and throw fear of global war. And then we will be completely maintained and controlled by our fear, an irrational, emotional response. And government loves it when their people operate on fear. But remembering that anybody who would trade God's gift of liberty for a temporary security will soon have neither. Why? Because liberty is your only assurance of security. And global security is a phantom. It's a false paradigm. It can't happen. If men were angels, we wouldn't even need governments, but they're not. There is corruption. There is deceit in this world. American people should know that better than anybody, especially in light of our government today. How can you trust anything that our government tells us about what's happening in the world when they're not even honest with us what's happening in our own country? You see, security is a phantom because there's always a bigger boogeyman. On 9/11, America saw the biggest boogeyman they had seen in hundreds of years. And in light of that, we traded our liberty through the Patriot Act to keep us safe. Are we any safer today than we were on 9/11? No. We're less safe, and we have less liberty. And now we have people crying for crazy things, like religious tests, and for closing down religious organizations, and for closing down religious buildings. Our government will use that against us, just like they used our cry for definition of marriage. They will use it against us in the same way that they have used the education system against the Constitution and against liberty. Because what we must recognize is that government wants more power. And in times of peace, government does not have power. There is no excuse for government to have power in a time of peace. So governments must create war to make the people fear so that we will give them more power. But when government has more power, people have less liberty. Do not enslave our children of the future because our fear will trump their rights. It's time to be critical, wise, liberty-minded people. God bless. See you tomorrow.